That is Mario Bausa and his orchestra with A Night in Tunisia. Very jazzed up Afro-Cuban version of the song made very, very famous by Dizzy Gillespie. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Wednesday, December the 26th. Are you ready? And Bank of America reportedly is moving to shut down several of its branches in Boston and in the surrounding areas. Among 750 branches nationwide that it intends to close as a cost-cutting measure. The downsizing will also mean that the Charlotte-based financial giant will be cutting 30,000 jobs. 2 months ago, you may recall, federal prosecutors in New York sued Bank of America, alleging that it perpetrated a $1 billion mortgage fraud. And while Wall Street is hedging its bets on a quick deal in Washington, political observers say it is probably optimistic to think that. They're really not expecting a budget before January the 1st. The president, of course, has cut short his Christmas vacation and is back stateside for talks that are expected to resume tomorrow. They now, you know how they coin these phrases, they're now talking about a bungee jump off of the so-called fiscal cliff, meaning that there is a possibility that the president and House Speaker John Boehner might work something out to pass emergency allocations to fund necessary programs. But even that seems to be bogged down by the internecine warfare that has been raging between the parties for how knows how long now. Who knows how long? Which brings me to my thought today. And it's this. Now, if you've had to have the services of an attorney, I'm sure you are well aware of malpractice suits, or maybe a physician, or a psychiatrist, or some other professional, who are all kind of, they're governed not only by a code of ethics, but they also have to cover themselves in case somebody may think that they were not afforded the services that they paid for. It's commonly called malpractice, professional malpractice. I think it is not a stretch to suggest that what we have in Congress calling itself a, you know, some kind of a face-off on the budget is a form of legislative malpractice. This blockage has persisted for 3 years. For 3 years, the United States has not had a budget. And part of what it is, these legislators are supposed to be doing, part of their expertise and part of their reason for being in the House and in the Senate, is to help pass a budget. Now, we see a lot of quarreling. We see a lot of tit for tat. We see a lot of political posturing. But we don't see a lot of progress, and it's incomprehensible that a country that calls itself a superpower could literally be run without an articulated budget. And it seems, of course, you know, people are saying they're very upset about it and, you know, we ought to do better. And what the fact is, it's not going the way it ought to go. And the only thing I could think of is that it's a form of malpractice. Maybe nothing is being done because the wrong people are there. or nothing is being done because they can get away with it. Nothing is being done because it suits the purpose for a whole bunch of folks who, you know, have their political agendas to carry out, and they're playing games, and they can afford to play games. They can't afford to play games because nearly half of Congress is made up of millionaires, multimillionaires. They don't have to worry about silly little things like mortgage payments or tuition or medical coverage or where the money's going to come from to buy groceries. They don't have to worry about where the money's coming from to buy gas, or how are they going to pay for John's dormitory expenses. So they have options that we don't have. They're not in a state of duress. They're not really suffering. They have cushions. They get paid pretty well. They have the best of medical coverage and the best of working conditions, as we saw with the case of Jesse Jackson Jr. You could be out of office for almost half a year and still get paid and still not be thrown out of your job. It's a good thing to be a legislator in Congress. So why is it that these folks get elected and suddenly the budget process, as we understand it, seems to be involving just two people, John Boehner and Barack Obama? We are not told, as the citizens who vote, we're not told where things are going or what is happening, what is hampering progress. We're not told of the state of affairs. And in fact, it seems that even the legislators themselves, the people who were elected, are told what's going on a need-to-know basis. And it seems quite a few are deemed not really worth letting in on what's going on. When the two lead characters sit down in a room to hash out a budget for the entire nation. Isn't anybody embarrassed about this in Congress? That we dare present ourselves to the universe and we quickly point fingers to governments we say are, you know, banana republic type governments, they say. Third world type governments. But they all can articulate a budget. For 3 years, we haven't had a budget. And those 3 years, of course, were generally Barack Obama's first term in office. They swore, the Republicans, that he was going to get nothing done, and they saw to it that he got nothing done. And the Democrats were not able to supplant the desires of the Republicans through very vigorous effort. Everybody kind of threw up their hands and said, well, you know, this is the way it is, and somehow we have to compromise and we have to make deals and you know, this is the way the process works. Bottom line is we've already spent 3 years like a ship that's just the lashes have been cut. And the ship is just sailing wherever the current takes it. We have no plan, and we have no plan to have a plan. And the people are supposed to say, okay, The people are not supposed to get upset. We're not supposed to demand something from this government. But I say that we need to call it for what it is. This is legislative malpractice. And if it continues any longer, in fact, I think the time is long since past, where a popular movement needs to start to recall everybody. Since they can't get the job done, they obviously are the wrong people there. We need to get people who can get the job done. If they can't do it, let us ask them to leave. Get out of office and put somebody else who knows how to pass a budget. And who knows that that is a requirement. Congress is required to have a budget. 3 years already gone by, it's unforgivable that we should not have had a budget for 3 years. And there is this nonsense going on where essentially, you know, in this last few hours leading up to the absolute deadline, something will happen, we don't know what. And they will present it to the American people as a victory. You know, look what we produce. Look, Ma, look what we got. We have a budget. Is this the way a sophisticated country is supposed to run? Is this what we are supposed to tolerate? And even when they present whatever it is they come up with as a stopgap measure, if that's what is going to happen before January the 1st, that we have a stopgap measure, the fact is, when budgets are put forward, the one place that they never ever look to cut is the pork, hidden in all these crevices of allocations. We've not heard the Democrats discuss looking and hunting for the pork. We have not heard of the Republicans saying, look, if we have to cut services, we have to cut programs, well, let's review what we have already allocated funding for, and let's determine whether those projects are absolutely necessary. But where are the pork projects? Both sides are agreeing that that's off the table. We're not going to expose those. We're going to hide those. The billions and billions of dollars hidden in pork barrel projects that this congressman or that senator wants to bring into the district to please somebody who has funded his or her campaign, or to whom he or she feels an undue loyalty. Nobody is looking for pork barrel projects. But we know, no matter how they swing the axe, it is an axe, and they will be swinging. And it is the history of axe swinging that they always try to bury the axe in the backs of regular working and non-working folk, poor people. They will suffer. No, correction. We will suffer. I'm one of them. The axe is coming. They're trying to figure out how to present the cuts so that we can commiserate with the agony that they suffered in articulating this budget. They've worked so hard. They've argued over and over again. They didn't want to make these cuts, but we absolutely have to. We have no choice. because spending is out of control and we have to cut somewhere. Yes, one side will say, Barack Obama would say, well, I got my cherry, which is the tax increases on the rich. And Boehner would say, well, we got our cherry because we succeeded in making the cuts where cuts needed to be made. And both of them will walk out of the room, each claiming victory, and each claiming how hard each side worked. But as the African saying goes, when two elephants fight, it's the grass that loses. And right now, the vast majority of Americans are the grass. I think we need to push for a piece of legislation that would declare a moratorium, a limit to the number of days once a budget process has begun by which the process should be culminated. And I really think we need to start labeling these folks as people who are committing before our very eyes legislative malpractice. If it were possible to sue them for that, if it were possible to remove them from office for being incompetent. Look, in the private sector, or in the public sector, in the regular world, in the non-congressional world, there is no way you can underperform this way with year after year after year of non-performance and still have a job and still have a position in Congress and still earn a living. There is no way that that could happen. But of course, as legislators, they also know the fine art of exempting themselves from a whole bunch of things that they can't be sued for or can't be moved on for. You know, they're not to be held to the same standard. They're on winter break, essentially. The country is going to hell in a handbasket. And, you know, people are, well, we'll get to it. I'm sure we will get to it eventually. We'll get to the budget. It's a priority and people break for vacation. It is so essential to our day-to-day functioning. And right now, nobody's in Congress. This is outrageous. And it ought to be so embarrassing that they shouldn't even want to show their faces again. But I think it's time to start, you know, talking about these folks in terms of the malpractice, because they clearly are not competent legislators. We ought to take a vote of no confidence. This government, this system is not working. We want one that does. And here's a bad part of it. It is not because there aren't people who know how to do a budget. This country produces, every time you hear about the Nobel Prize for Economics, you can almost always count that there are a couple of Americans in the lot. We have fantastic people who have a real good handle on this thing called the economy. They're not here. We don't see them. We don't see them being tapped to render some kind of thoughts about where the country ought to go. The people practicing economics are politicians. You might as well ask a mechanic to do brain surgery. They have no schooling in how an economy works. These are people who have politicized the process of crafting economic principles that would govern the country. Should we feel comfortable leaving economic theory to politicians, people who have no schooling about it, or little schooling, or who think that running a nation is the same as running a business? It isn't. You know, this is where we are, and this is why progress is so slow. Because the nation is in the hands of a bunch of folks who clearly don't have what it takes to get the job done. They are not qualified to handle the framing and the crafting of an economy, and they ought to give that job up to people who can do it. If we're talking politics, they can talk all day long. But when you're talking economics, you don't hand that casually over to a bunch of politicians and expect a true, workable idea to come out of that process. Sound economic theory, following sound economic principles. We've seen that they couldn't get it done in 3 years. Because, again, the business of crafting an economy is in the hands of politicians. Can we expect any great result from that? And this is what we are supposed to regard as part of the job. This is part of the process of democracy. The people shall elect a bunch of nudniks who are into politics and themselves and their futures, and who have, because they are, quote, elected, unquote, have automatic privilege to handle trillions and trillions of dollars. And to decide how we're going to operate. And they have no one is required to have a very deep understanding of economics. Nobody's required to go to school to learn what a national economy looks like and what is supposed to happen. It's the American way. I tell you, you know, sometimes you worry that the people could be so far ahead of the leadership. It reminds you of that Mahatma Gandhi quote, you know, "There go my people. I must hurry to catch up with them." The people are always ahead of the leadership. These folks are running this country into the ground. And they think that it is all right to do, that it is in fact their prerogative to do. They have no reason to hurry because they're working out deals that will benefit them and people like them. As I said, when more than half, or close to more than half, the Congress made up of millionaires, you can see they're probably thinking about their next vacation right now. Or skiing in Aspen. Or spending the summer, you know, in the south of France. They are not under the gun, as most people I know are, and I too am, where you have to literally worry almost day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute about your economic life. These are the people who hold our economic lives in their hands, and they're not qualified to do it at all. So being elected gives whoever gets there the right to envision the world through their eyes. It is their world that they fashion. It is their world that they legislate for. Oh, yeah, yeah, we'll throw a couple of crumbs off the table for, you know, the unwashed masses. But the priority, the number one priority, is them and people like them. And in this regard, the Democrats are no different from the Republicans. They all belong to the same class. They are the ruling class. They are the people who get to do things that we must abide by. They get to make the laws that we must obey. They get to make the priorities that we have to tolerate. They get to indulge in legislative malpractice, and we can't sue. What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888. Let me know. We'll take a break, come back to your thoughts right after this. It's Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're talking about the fiscal budget, and we're really talking about the fact that we have in Washington, D.C., a bunch of people engaging in legislative malpractice. The fact that they have hung up the country this long, 3 years and counting. The fact that we have no movement despite all of this so-called negotiation going on, this is insane. This is just insane. And for a superpower, it ought to be extremely embarrassing for this country to be in such a situation for this long. Well, let's see who's on the air at 1-888-874-4888. You're on. Hello.
Yes. Good afternoon and happy Kwanzaa to you, Sister Eutrice.
Thank you.
You know, it's funny. I had saw a documentary called The End of the Row, How Money Became Worthless. And in this documentary, they talked about how there is, I think, 400 families that control 80% of the wealth in this country. 80% of the wealth in this country. And it seems like these politicians are more beholden to the people that control that 80% of the wealth than the American people. Now, it just amazes me how Barack Obama talks about how he was a community organizer that started his political career. So it's quite obvious that he understands clearly what poverty is because he's seen it firsthand. And for him to allow these people within the government to do what they're doing to Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, and in the process not cut, like you said, the pork that goes along in this country to balance this budget so that, let's say, these 400 families and maybe another 3,000 to 5,000 people could keep getting richer and richer while millions of people are basically facing the abyss within the next 15 to 20 years. There's something wrong with that. It's insanity to me. And I'm trying constantly to understand when are the American people going to wake up and what is going to be done about it.
I don't think it's about the American. I think the American people, to some degree, they did wake up. They did send into Congress people they felt would do the job. But they also fell back and decided that, well, I voted, so my job is over. I don't have to do very much more. You know, and we wait and see what happens in 4 years. We'll give whoever, person A or person B, 4 more years, and we'll see what happens at the end of that time. And, you know, I'll go back to the voting booth and either, you know, vote the same person in or vote somebody new, depending on how I feel. That's the extent to which most Americans get involved in politics. And that gives permission to the legislators down there to do whatever it is they want to do, because the minute the election is over, the electorate just retreats into their own little world, and they say, well, now, you know, I did my job. Let's see what these guys do down there in Washington. We do not stay on the case, and this is what happens. This is what happens. So we know there is no way that there won't be steep cuts. There will be steep cuts. And purely from the point of view that it really doesn't have that much to do with, quote, balancing the budget, unquote, as much as it has to do with the political agendas that are being formulated. The political agendas have to be satisfied. And that's the primary call to action for the folks in Washington, D.C. Their political agendas are on the top of the list. That's it. That's the way it is. So we talk all the time. But let me ask you, did you vote?
Of course.
All right. Since having voted, what have you done with respect to contact with your legislator, whoever it is you voted for Congress?
I've been in the face of Charlie Rangel. I've been in the face of Perkins. I've been in the face of Wright. I've been in all of their faces. And you know what the funny thing is, Utrecht? That they listen, but they don't do anything, because unfortunately we as a people don't have a plan, and we don't have a collective to go there in numbers to make them accountable for what they're doing. But the funny thing in New York is this: they're all going to be out of office soon, because there is not a backlash coming against them, but there's of movement by Latinos in the way that the districts have been reorganized, which I hear a lot about.
Yeah, but you know, that's the future, Jay. I'm talking about right now. Thanks for calling, though. You put some thoughts out. Let's see how other people are going to react to them. Thank you. Hello, Chris from Queens. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have so much to say on this, but I'm going to try to be brief. And I know that you're very generous with your time, so I'll try to be, you know, simple and to the point. There's a couple of points I'd like to make regarding what people can do and all of that. This is just a general on-the-side comment just to start off. There is no left in this country. There is no left. I mean, these labels of Republican and Democrat really need to be reexamined, because the meaning of what these labels, what the meaning, you know, the meaning that they held before is no longer applicable. More specifically for the Democrats, for example, it no longer applies, because the Democrats who, you know, the people who comprise the so-called Democratic Party today have become so prosperous and wealthy, and you know, your view changes when you're on the top of the mountain. So I just wanted to add that in there, because all of this, and the reason I say this is because even when you observe the so-called left on television, including MSNBC, and some of those programs are well done, don't get me wrong, I don't want to take away anything from these people that they deserve, but they don't serve, most of these people get paid very well. Because there's a Democratic president in office, for example, they will not probably discuss to the point they should and probably would have absolutely torn it to shreds had George Bush been in power at the time, regarding these insidious cuts that are going to be made on recipients of Social Security, more specifically the baby boomers who will start collecting it. And I want to speak on that for a moment because I find it very deeply disturbing to me. Here we have a Democratic president, a very likable man, an intelligent man, all of those wonderful things that he absolutely deserves, who wanted to be king. Now, if one was not able to take on these, I'm sorry to say this, but these Congress people, as you were saying, are really, I mean, they're a little bit higher than gangsters because simply because of where they are. And I'm going to tell you why I say that. I mean, he wanted to be king. If he couldn't take them on, he should not have run for office, which leads me to my second point, and that is the conclusion that he is serving the interests of the people who helped put him in power. And he knows that this is what his job is. So in that sense, he is doing what he, in his own mind, was put there to do. We, the rest of us here, are all secondary. And the idea that they would actually choose to cut Social Security from the elderly and have such a difficult time increasing the taxes on the, I don't know what it is now, is it over $250,000 that it's going to be over $1 million? It's never explained to us by the media because that's intentional. They don't want people to understand it. So people are stuck with two phrases, some catchphrase like fiscal cliff, mm-hmm. and they get attached to it and that's it. I mean, the idea that they would cut from the elderly, the first thing in this country, with all of the money that the speculators on Wall Street make, and when I say that, I'm not referring to their salaries, I'm referring to the windfall profits when they make bets, these hedge funds. I mean, this is an outrageous. I mean, if people just started to sit back and just allow themselves to absorb it, I don't know what, you know, I don't even know. I mean, they would explode out of sheer emotional inability to contain themselves. You know, these people are not taxed on this money. If I bought a lottery ticket tomorrow and won $5,000, I'd probably end up getting, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, probably like $3,000 of that or whatever it is that I pay, right, which would be fine. These people don't get taxed on that amount. We're talking about money that is absolutely beyond belief, and they're going to hit Social Security, and they're doing it very insidiously. They're going to play with the numbers and make it appear as if it's, the cost of living or whatever it is, the words that they use. So, you know, are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
I'm paying direct attention.
You're doing fine.
And so this stuff that they're, you know, this show that they're presenting every year, they do this before Christmas, and then they all go off into their, as you said earlier very well, their little hideaways and their vacations, okay? And we're supposed to be lulled by the sales that are taking place now and be happy because we have, you know, the mamas and the papas in Congress taking care of all of us here. It's just a bunch of baloney, you know? And Barack Obama, President Obama should really be held to this. Okay, now I understand, you know, who's, you know, the people he's dealing with are against him. But you know what? At some point, one needs to say, this is what is important for me, not my legacy, and this is what I'm going to choose to do. And there are certain things I don't touch. You know, like you don't.
Well, yes, I talked about that because Barack Obama comes out of the same mold in the Democratic Party that Bill Clinton came out of, who seems to be one of his mentors. I don't understand why, but it's a Democratic Leadership Council. What they professed ideologically is that Democrats, this group, thinks that a centrist position is where they ought to be. Stay in the center lane, give yourself enough wiggle room so you can shift to the left if you have to, or you can shift to the right if you have to, but stay dead center. And Barack Obama basically came into this budget negotiation process with the same ideological mindset as the Republicans. The Democratic Leadership Council had two important planks in their approach to economics, which is raise taxes and cut spending, or cut the deficit and cut spending. You know, that's their model. That's the model that they follow because it gives them a political advantage. They get to say, see, we brought prosperity to the country and so forth. So for in service of an ideological mindset, which of course does not apply in the way that national economies, world economies really function. They function differently. But this is exactly where he has gone. What is the difference between Barack Obama and Boehner right now? You notice Barack Obama is not radically altering anything. He didn't come in there to just tear up things that are not working and institute new things that should. He's not making any drastic, dramatic changes in the status quo at all. He's just tweaking. And the tweaks that he's going after would be this little tweak over here with the taxes on the rich, and he's going to tweak, get another thing to pass the health care bill, which should be opposed. It should be thrown out completely and started over again because I believe the bill is completely unconstitutional, not so much in its impact, but from its very inception. It was created illegally and without proper constitutional and congressional input. So it's a bogus piece of legislation to begin with.
May I just say something very quickly? You know,
sure.
I was talking about this yesterday with my nephew who called me to wish me a Merry Christmas, and we just spoke a little bit about politics, but not much because we couldn't both take it. This thing with Social Security, when you stop to think about it, it wasn't that long ago when banks actually gave you an interest on a regular savings account in the bank. Of course,
right.
Now it's not worth to put anything because there's nothing that you get.
Right.
But you used to get a regular, you know, whether you had a CD or you had a savings account. Now, when you put your money in the bank, the idea was that the bank used your money and you got an interest on it, whatever it was, okay? And the point, the kind of simplistic point that I made was if the bank, something happened with the bank and they were selling drug money or, you know, they were laundering money or whatever it was. I mean, the point is that you had a right to get that money because it was your money, okay? The government guaranteed it. If somebody came along and stole it, I think the bank would have to back it up. The point was that it was the people's money. It was your money, your personal money. The way I view Social Security, though, it is a social program, and this is the problem, that words are thrown around, and most people do not sit back and think, wait a minute, what do they mean when they say freedom? Wait a minute, what do they mean when they say constitutional accuracy? Okay? They're telling us now, they call it an entitlement program. Now, I understand there are sub-programs such as Medicaid and the Medicare for you when you become of age. You know, I understand, but specifically, that Social Security check that was created, which was one of the finest ideas that ever came across, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on, because it gave a person who got older and your dynamic changes as you get older, and some people who did menial work had to retire when they were 60, 65 because they couldn't do what they were doing anymore. I mean, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, the point is that that money was deducted from our paychecks without our decision. It was deducted, okay? A certain percentage from your paycheck. So in other words, I mean, this is not a free program is my point.
Well, and this is a point, and this is a complete mislabeling of a program. It's, again, because people don't understand it. The people covering these things are calling them all entitlement programs. They are not all entitlement programs. There are entitlement programs, and there are transfer payment programs, which is what Medicaid is. Entitlement programs tend to be programs that do not have a means test. They don't have to take a certain, you don't have to qualify by taking a means test, meaning they measure your income and you have to satisfy a whole bunch of things in order to qualify. And typically in an entitlement program, as opposed to a transfer payment program or a third party program, you, in an entitlement program, you automatically qualify because, for example, your age. And you typically are contributing to the benefits that you get. That's an entitlement program. Now, they've lumped it all together, and they're calling all of these programs entitlement programs, which tells you, again, they don't even understand the economic terms that they ought to be using. Medicaid is not an entitlement program.
Well, that's a very good distinction. I'm glad because I also started to question myself, you know, over the years. Sometimes you just take things for granted when you're younger, you know. But I mean, I just like to ask you a question. I'm very serious about this. I don't know why this is even legal. As I understand that Social Security, that is not part of the budget. It's a different fund. That's what it was intended to be. Is that correct?
Yes, and the thing is that the Social Security money that had been squirreled away in previous years was actually used to guarantee other money that the government used in a rapacious way. They just raided the Social Security bank.
I think that happened during Clinton's administration quite a bit as well. Isn't that right?
I'll have to check that, but I wouldn't be surprised. But the thing is that the Social Security program is actually a socialist program.
Right.
It's the closest this country has ever come to the Communist Manifesto. And in fact, was a very effective and has been a very effective program. It is a program that says people contribute, as with the government, and at the appropriate time, they draw from the benefits that they've contributed to the program. That's an entitlement program. They're entitled to that.
Why do they think that they're entitled to touch it, though? That was my point. I mean, in other
words, because they're government and they could do anything they want.
Yeah, because they're basically very extremely corrupt. And America needs to stop talking about other corrupt governments, because you know what? My family were immigrants here. I grew up in this country. I was very little when we got here, and I was schooled here. But I want to tell you something, and this is not a sob story or anything. I mean, my parents came here and they followed the rules. They did everything that they were supposed to do. And you never heard, I mean, it was this, I just get overwhelmed sometimes. You know, I would never have said this. I never heard my parents talking about that, because they essentially had a fundamental sort of belief that the system, that the sort of the basis of the system was fair to people. You know, they talk about the American dream and all this other stuff that's floating around. It's just so different today. I mean, I would never have heard those words when I was growing up, because people didn't, they had a faith in their sort of the basic structure. I mean, people always know politicians are corrupt and all this other stuff, but you had a basic belief system that, for example, if somebody did you wrong, you could go to court, you'd find an honest judge. You know what I mean? And everything has just been thrown out the window, and these people are allowed to get away with something that I think is fundamentally, not only is it unfair, it's fundamentally illegal. And this was my point that I wanted to make. When I talked about the savings account in the bank, for example, I don't know why they're allowed to touch that. If they want to change the system, and that's what they're trying to do, they're trying to make Social Security privatized so they can go to Wall Street like the 401k.
Well, that was a Clinton plank. Right out of Clinton's
now,
plank.
Now, if they want to do this, let them determine that the people who are, whatever they determine, just like when they raise the retirement age, let them determine that. For those people who all, you know, worked and got to that point and are now going to get, you know, their feet cut off at the knees because they need money, I just find that illegal. I don't know why that's acceptable. And the idea that you would attack, you know, it really says a lot about a society, the way they view their elderly, okay? I have to say that because I am tired of hearing these cascading haired women on these business channels and all of these guys with all of their knowing how it's going to come, and they know economy. And you mentioned economy earlier. You know, economy is not only finance. If you look at the meaning of the word, it has to do with the laws. And not written laws, but the laws of where a person lives, in other words, their particular space and place, okay? And that's influenced by climate. You know, you could get into it a little more deeply, but it's influenced by many factors, okay? People who live in cities as opposed to people who live in rural areas. There are other considerations to make, you know? I mean, when you run on Wall Street and you just sit there and bet behind a computer, you could never understand what a farm worker would go through, so to speak. So the idea that they're tying finance to economy and everything is, you know, that's one problem, and I agree with what you were saying. Finance is just money, Okay? And money is not a value. I mean, money is there because it measures the value within a society. And once they, what has happened here is that everything is measured in terms of this money that exists, and that's made a value. In the same way that you would value your child's birthday or your religion or whatever it may be that you cherish in your life. You know what I mean? And I don't hear any of these Democrats, and I won't mention any names, some of them are respectable talk show hosts also on the radio. They make me, I have to say this and I will end, and I thank you so much for the time. I have never heard any of them make the point that I'm making to say, you know what, hold on a minute. Rather than being shills for the Democratic Party and saying, well, the Republicans are doing this, it's just a lot of baloney. I mean, they're to say that this is what it is, that we have to call it by its proper name, and that you take certain stances and you say, you know what, you don't touch this. It's not your money, pal. I don't care if you are president or you're the crier of the house like Mr.
Well, they're Boehner. All in this. They're all doing, there's a laissez-faire attitude in Congress, and they can do just about anything because they have immunity. Thanks, Chris, for
Thank
calling.
Thank you very much.
A very, very interesting input today. I want to, we are at the end of our program almost, and I just wanted to wrap up by saying, just watch this process very carefully. And you will see the mindset in Washington. Lives are in the balance. Lives are in the balance. But you will see that in their heads, it's their political agendas and their political profiles that must come first. They have to save themselves as public figures first. No question, we are going to have a bunch of hurt being doled out between now and the new year. It's going to happen. But I think that people should also get ready to buy some really good, comfortable tennis shoes, because I think people have to hit the streets and do what they did in Greece and Spain and every place else that we saw people just protesting the reckless moves of governments that have subjected them to extraordinary sacrifice and pain. It's coming, and for no good reason. We should clearly have some independent auditing going on. We know there are billions of dollars hidden in pork barrel projects. And those projects will be funded because they are connected to political longevity. So It's all a sham, but make sure you pay really, really, really close attention. You'll see how it unfolds before our very eyes. I want to thank you for calling and participating. I like getting your emails at leadstories, leidstories@gmail.com. And you would want to stay tuned because Jack Rasmus is next with Alternative Visions. See you tomorrow. Thanks.